City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Saltzman? Potter?
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, the lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity he or she is authorized to represent. Please read the 6 p.m. time certain. Read them together.
Item 509, Gray to Green Initiative Briefing. Item 510, Create a Voluntary Funding Program that provides an opportunity for all Portland sewer ratepayers to invest in making Portland green and improving watershed health.
Mr. Adams.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the City Council. Portland is blessed with 37 inches of rain annually. This produces a staggering 20 billion gallons of stormwater runoff each year. Traditional stormwater management has come with a huge price tag. We are currently spending $1.4 billion on the big pipe to keep sewage out of the Willamette River. Fortunately, we have moved beyond merely funneling stormwater into pipes. Portland is a national leader in green development, practices, and sustainable stormwater management. We are making progress in our efforts, but we need to step up the pace to protect our watersheds, rivers, and streams from further degradation as Portland's population grows. To do that, we need a fundamental shift toward solutions that provide long-term environmental and financial benefits. I've been working with the Bureau of Environmental Services and community partners to develop what we're going to hear tonight, Gray to Green. Environmental Services Director Dean Marriott is here today to share the details of this important initiative.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Mayor and members of the Council. I am Dean Marriott, Environmental Services Director. And as the Commissioner said, I'm here to talk to you about this Gray to Green program. It has been evolving and will continue to evolve as it moves forward. As the Commissioner indicated, before development, of course, the rain fell on the ground and most of it was absorbed into the ground. Very little of it actually ran off into our surface waters. That's not the case anymore, of course. Post-development environment, we've essentially replaced that native soil with asphalt and rooftops, and so we've changed the entire water cycle and dynamic. The total that the Commissioner mentioned, 20 billion gallons of stormwater annually, actually is projected to go up. By 2040, we expect to add another 5 billion gallons of stormwater that we will have to manage by then. So our task is quite formidable. Fortunately, we've got some experience here locally now in the last few years on a more sustainable approach as to how to do this. We're managing stormwater as close to where it falls as possible, recognizing it as a resource instead of a problem. And as a result, cities from around the world, literally, are asking us for explanations of how we do it and how it works here. And teams of people from around the country and around the world show up in Portland every month to experience what we have learned. Here's just a few of the challenges and some of the proposed solutions to those problems. Of course, we have a lot of streets in Portland, so the stormwater that hits those streets runs into catch basins and doesn't disappear. It goes somewhere. It either goes into the sewer system or it goes into local surface waters, streams such as Johnson Creek or Fano. A solution for this would be more green streets. We have about 475 green street features similar to what you see in this photograph in Portland now. We need a lot more of them. The reason we need a lot more of them is they are terrific and they do wonders. In some cases, they can reduce peak flow runoff by as much as 90%. They help recharge groundwater and they improve water quality. Another challenge, of course, is rooftops. We've got a lot of them in Portland, and there are more coming. Rain falls on the rooftop and runs off into the sewer system or into the nearby water body. In the summer, these rooftops absorb heat and radiate heat. A solution that's been proven already here in Portland are something we call eco-roofs or green roofs. That's a vegetated system that grows on the roof. The roof actually is projected to last twice as long as a conventional roof. And some of the benefits are it reduces the volume of stormwater leaving the site by as much as half. and the peak volume, which is really a problem for us to handle, by as much as 90%. We now have in Portland about 6 acres of green roofs, and we hope to have more. A challenge we face: vehicles emitting greenhouse gases. We're all familiar with global warming and the problems that that's causing us. A solution is as simple as planting more trees, and I know this council has heard a lot from the urban forestry folks, and you adopted just in March a goal to increase the urban tree canopy to 33% coverage, and we think we can help do that. There's an added benefit. There's about a 10% reduction in stormwater just taken up by trees, so there's a terrific environmental benefit. You're all aware of the other benefits, the air pollution improvements, we're lucky in that we have great folks at the Office of Sustainable Development and the Portland Department of Transportation that are helping with alternatives to using private cars. A big challenge we face: non-native plants, invasive species, and OPB is just doing a special here just this month called The Silent Invasion, which talks about the problems we face as a society from invasive plant and animal species. They are literally taking over our public and private green spaces. The solution is get out there and restore the area, rip out the invasive species, and plant native plants. Give them a chance to survive. It's good for water quality, good for habitat, and protects the green spaces we have. So far, we've been able to remove about 2,000 acres of invasive plant species, but there is a great deal more to be done. Another challenge: development that threatens our natural areas. Some of our watersheds are greatly impacted by development that is not done in a sensitive way, and we've made some progress in this area, but certainly a solution is to protect natural areas, some of it with public acquisition. We've acquired dozens of properties since the 1996 flood in the Johnson Creek area and protected those areas from flooding. We've worked very well with Metro Parks and the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board to secure other critical properties, and as I say, more needs to be done. A challenge that may not be all that obvious to a lot of us, but we have culverts under some of our roads and streets in Portland that block fish passage. They're elevated like this one. The fish literally can't get through. We've identified about 250 of those in Portland. In the last few years, we've been able to fix 8 of them. As you can see, it's a slow process that is quite expensive. But solution: replace them with culverts or passageways that allow fish to move freely about the watershed. It's clear we need to act. We've been making good progress. I think, as I said, reflected well on the city that so many people have come to Portland to find out how we're doing it. But there's still that 5 billion gallons of extra stormwater coming our way by the infill development that Portland faces. So we need to actually move more aggressively to stay ahead of that problem. So what's being proposed is a 5-year, $50 million Gray to Green initiative in the next 5 years, targeting adding to our inventory of green infrastructure, 43 acres of eco-roofs, over 900 green streets, planting 83,000 trees, protecting over 400 acres of green space, and replacing an additional 8 culverts that block fish passage. We're not going to do this alone. It's going to require us to continue with the partnerships we've been successfully developing over the last 20 years and building new ones, aligning ourselves with organizations and nonprofits and the private sector that we have not yet developed in order to make this happen. The first year starting, what we're proposing for the first year is starting in July of 2008, is a $5 million first-year investment. It would allow us to move forward with acquiring or helping to develop 3 acres of additional eco-roofs, 8 new green street projects, help plant about 5,000 more trees in Portland, continue with our progress on invasive species removal, purchase over 40 acres of critical habitat, and restore about 70 additional acres of existing property. So how will we do this? Well, we've been fortunate in the last few months that the interest rate climate actually has been improved somewhat, and we went out for some major revenue bond sales, and that will allow us to come forward with a proposed amendment to our budget to add this $5 million authorization without changing the forecast for a rate impact next year. So in January, we were projecting a 5.7% a bill increase for the typical residential customer. We believe we can, if you agree with us, that we can amend our budget to add this $5 million first-year initiative and still stay within that target of 5.7% rate increase. In the second year, if as we move forward in years 2 through 5 of the program, it would require the impact of ratepayers to go up by a tenth of a percent. So the bill increase would have to be 5.8% in years 2 through 5, one-tenth of a percent higher than we had projected in January. But that would give us $40 million from ratepayers and give us 5 years to raise $10 million through grants and partnerships with other organizations to hit that $50 million target for the five-year program. We think it's very achievable, and we think the goals are a stretch for us, but we do think they can be met. Let me just give you one example of how the new infrastructure is being put to work in Portland. This is a part of Southeast Portland which we call the Brooklyn Creek Basin. It rises around Mount Tabor Park and the Mount Tabor Reservoirs and moves toward the river between basically Hawthorne and Division. It's 2.5 square miles, or roughly 2% of the surface area of the city. 7,500 people live here. There are hundreds of businesses and other institutions in this area. This area needs infrastructure fixes. The sewers are old and in many cases close to failing. We need to get in there and act aggressively. It presents an opportunity for us. Back in 2000, we looked at building a whole new collection system for this area. We priced that out at $144 million. Then we went back and said, what if we did it with a mix of gray and green infrastructure, using a lot of the techniques that I described for you earlier in this presentation? We've now redesigned this program and come up with a combination of gray and green infrastructure with a cost estimate of $81 million. So just in this one area, by using a green infrastructure mixed with gray infrastructure, we can save the ratepayers of Portland about $63 million and get the job done and get it done right. So there are, of course, many additional benefits from green facilities. You're all familiar with them. I'm sure many of them in your own neighborhoods, you've seen them. We preserve the capacity of the combined sewer overflow tunnel that we're building now. We reduce peak flow. We reduce that surge of stormwater that is so detrimental to our creeks and streams in Portland. We actually improve water quality. We recharge the groundwater. We enhance our urban tree canopy, which I know is important to Portlanders. We reduce the heat island effect, that local heating effect that drives up energy costs. We improve soil conditions. Many of these serve as traffic calming devices in local neighborhoods, which helps to improve community livability. And, of course, we improve wildlife and fish habitat. So in closing, I just want to say I think what Gray to Green presents for us is a question. What do we want our future to look like? And I just want to take a moment to not only thank my staff, but thank many of the partners that we've worked with over the years. And if you concur that this is the way to go, we'll be building on those relationships in the future that helped us put this program together. Thank you very much.
Any questions for Dean? All right. In terms of invited testimony, we have three folks. Is that right? I'd like to... but before I do that, I just want to acknowledge Dean and the entire BES staff for, we've been working on this for almost 3 years. And if I could have the BES staff stand up that worked on this project, any aspect of this project, stand up. Don't make us call you out. And can we have a round of applause for them? Appreciate it. I'd also like to acknowledge Lisa Libby from my staff, who's worked very hard on this. Have you stand and embarrass her. Give her a round of applause. If we could have Bob Salinger come up for some invited testimony. And Bob of the Portland Audubon Society and Mike Houck of the Urban Green Spaces Institute, I want to thank them for their commitment to this. They've been advocating for this for longer years than I've been the commissioner in charge of BES. And our watersheds are in much better health or on the way to being in much better health because of their support and their energy and a lot of the ideas that you've heard about today, started with them or at their urging. So first I'd like to ask Bob to talk, but also Mike can't be here today because he's on a beach in Mexico. We should not feel sorry for him, but I would like to invite Kelly Puttini. Hope I didn't. What's that?
Mike Harrison.
Okay, Mike, you come up. He's going to provide some testimony on behalf of Mike Houck. So, Bob.
Great. Good evening, Mayor Potter and members of City Council. My name is Bob Salinger, and I'm here on behalf of Audubon Society in Portland and our 10,000 members, and also on behalf of Coalition for a Livable Future. And both organizations had the pleasure of working with Commissioner Adams' staff on this, and I particularly want to thank Lisa Libby for her tireless work. She's done a phenomenal job. I also want to thank Bureau of Environmental Services as well. We've served on a number of committees over the years, really innumerable committees, I think, and their staff is really top-notch and does a phenomenal job. Those committees are very, very well-run and very productive, so I really appreciate the work that they do. We've had a number of big environmental achievements in Portland over the last several years, the passage of the green space bond measure, the system development charges for parks, so we have a lot to be proud of. But I think in some ways this decision might be the most important and the biggest in terms of really transforming our landscape and building a healthier community for all of our citizens. And I think it's worth recounting the history on this for a few seconds. Because the $50 million is not the result of some sudden inspiration or suddenly hopping on the environmental bandwagon. Rather, it's the result of a long and methodical and scientific process that's involved literally hundreds of community members over the years, scientists, advocates, the business community. We have dozens and dozens, really hundreds at this point, of pilot projects on the ground. We really, I think, have the best science that's ever been developed in an urban community on this topic, and that may sound like hyperbole, but I don't think it is. I've traveled to Europe, I've traveled to a number of states giving presentations, and I haven't seen anything like what we have in Portland, and I think most people recognize that this really is probably the most scientifically grounded plan that is out there. And in 2005, the city took this collective wisdom and consolidated it into the Actions for Watershed Health. And I remember testifying in 2005 and saying that we know what to do and we know how to do it. The question is whether we have the political will. And tonight, if you support this resolution, and we support this very strongly, I think you will demonstrate that we do have the political will. I thought there was a risk of this sitting on the shelf. We've had other plans that were also very good that really haven't gone very far. And so that was our concern, was that we really take this plan and convert it to real hard targets and provide the funding to move it forward. And that's what Gray to Green does tonight. Audubon believes this to be one of the smartest investments that the city will ever make. Traditional approaches do one thing. They put water in pipes and they transport it somewhere else. They treat water as a problem. We should be treating it as an amenity. This approach will let us achieve multiple objectives, clean air and clean water, addressing stormwater, fish and wildlife habitat. It'll drive our green economy, increase livability, and increase access to nature. It will also reduce greenhouse gases, and I think too often we've done a poor job of articulating how protecting our natural resources addresses global warming. Our focus has more often been on end-of-the-pipe solutions and technological fixes, and those things are all very, very important. But as ultimately our natural capital, our trees, our natural areas, our stream buffers, that will allow us to absorb greenhouse gases as well as adapt to the climatic changes that are inevitably coming. And I think there's a certain humility in this program in recognizing that no matter how smart we get and how technologically savvy we get, there's nothing that we'll ever do that will be as elegant or effective in dealing with our multiple environmental challenges as simply planting a tree. Finally, this will allow us to leverage the funds. It is a very good investment in that sense as well, because it gives the community real targets that they can understand. You know, I take this plan around to me every time I go to a community gathering, and I pass it out. BES finally gave me a couple of cases full of them so I could pass them out. And I always say, when you go to council, ask them. Doesn't matter what the project is, because this calls for implementing green strategies in all projects. Ask them if they're implementing it. But people can't understand this. It's too far removed. What you're doing tonight is delivering hard targets that will allow the community to get involved, let every individual, homeowner, neighborhood, and community group figure out what their piece of the puzzle is. And for a group like Audubon or CLF, this allows us to say we'll take on certain pieces and to work collaboratively with the community in the way that we never have been able to do before. So I'm going to end by thanking Commissioner Adams for all of his work on this. I think this is an incredibly important step forward. There was a similar plan several years ago that wasn't fully implemented, and at the time the Oregonian wrote, it doesn't take a genius to figure out what to do, but it may take some guts. I think it takes a lot of guts to make this kind of a change, so I really appreciate your effort on this.
Thank you. I think Bob said it all. Mike Hout expresses regrets for not being here, and so as a member of the UGI board, I agreed to come in here in his place, and I just have a few remarks. On behalf of the Urban Green Space Institute, we do offer our strongest endorsement for this plan. Portland has earned this reputation nationally for green development practices, sustainable stormwater management, low-impact development. It's a reputation that's highly deserved. It's been kind of an evolutionary process, though. I would have to say, I look back on not only Portland, but Oregon as environmental leaders and the reputation we have nationwide. It goes back to Senate Bill 100 and the drawing these rings around our cities, calling them urban growth boundaries. It was Mike Houck who in the 80s said, that's not enough. We can't just protect farm and forest land beyond our urban growth boundary. We need to take a look and see what we're going to do inside those urban growth boundaries. And Mike put on a series of seminars up at PSU called Country in the City that I think it woke up a lot of people in the professional community and the community at large as to what he was talking about. That natural green spaces even have a place in our cities. I think Mike awoke a lot of us up to that. And this has become an evolutionary process of developing green development initiatives that will really support, protect, enhance those green spaces that Mike was seeking to preserve 20 years ago. So this, I see, is an evolutionary process. We've been requiring the development community to do best management practices on private property. This is the city stepping up and doing what's right on the public infrastructure and on public property. And we just want to endorse what you're doing, and I think it's a great effort. Thank you, Sam Adams and City Council.
Thank you very much. Scott Fogarty from Friends of Trees. Well, Scott's coming up here. Like a lot of folks, I'd listened over the years to various radio reports and read newspaper articles how Malaysia is planting a million trees and, you know, to deal with global warming. And I thought, okay, well, we'll do 2 million trees in the city of Portland. And then Lisa and other members of the informed community told me why what we're suggesting in terms of 33,000 yard trees and 50,000 street trees is actually a better approach. And I want to thank you for your partnership on putting this together and maybe explain why the way we're doing it makes a lot more sense.
Sure. Good evening, Mayor and Council members. It's nice to be back in front of you. As I heard earlier, urban forestry has been mentioned a lot today, and we appreciate your paying attention to what urban forest and trees do for the community, both economically and environmentally. When I was first approached on undertaking such an endeavor as planting, I think initially it was 190,000 trees in 5 years, I really almost fell over. Other cities do have initiatives such as Commissioner Adams just mentioned, but they are not really progressing as fast as they would have liked initially for various reasons. And so I cautioned his team that an undertaking would, while looking great on paper, in reality probably wouldn't pan out in the long run. Finding enough volunteers to do it, finding enough homeowners to do it, finding enough funds to do it seemed a little extreme. So we worked with the team, including our friends at Portland Audubon and BES, to really roll up our sleeves and figure out what can we do, what is possible over 5 years, to keep the community building aspect that Friends of Trees brings to the table, as well as to grow a healthy urban forest, because we can't plant a tree today and then forget about it. We have to be stewards of this forest over time, otherwise the benefits won't be there in the long run. And in this day and age, when we recognize the need to remedy the impacts that we've made on our surrounding environment, we inevitably turn back to the natural world for solutions. Like Bob was saying, we do this more and more because we're re-examining the basic assumptions of environmental health as it relates to our economy and our ecosystem. And by investing today in Portland's green infrastructure, by supporting this initiative, you will and are making an investment that will save millions and possibly billions of dollars to the citizens of this city in infrastructure and ecosystem services and other services in the future. The benefits are varied and are many, as we've heard tonight, but they're relatively easy to see. And I reminded myself of this just a couple of days ago after we had the warm weather, kind of got used to it, and then we had the rain again. And walking down the street, I noticed that under the trees that had a canopy over the sidewalk was dry, and it was right there in front of me. It didn't take any type of science, it didn't take any type of convincing or billions of gallons of water or anything like that. You can just recognize it on your day-to-day commute to work. And Friends of Trees has worked with city agencies and other NGOs on this initiative, and we've helped one another understand that this is a doable, meaningful undertaking, and to do it in a way that's thoughtful and thought out, well thought out and well planned. The effect of this has to further strengthen the existing public-private partnership that Friends of Trees and other NGOs has with the city, and to help encourage the city to recognize this partnership and to build on it. We have done this by advising on costs and benefits, as Commissioner Adams just mentioned, with regard to increasing the urban canopy and building citizen awareness and education about the urban forest and green infrastructure, and energizing citizens to take part in voluntary efforts to help build this green infrastructure. And like the rings on a tree, I liked that analogy earlier about the growth rings we were talking about, but in a different way. As they grow with the growth of the tree, so do the benefits that they provide to our community. And so as they get older, they provide more benefits. In a recent City Nature estimate, that almost $4 to $1 benefits on the public trees are returned to the city for a $5 billion benefit that we received today for the trees that were planted some time ago. Friends of Trees is excited to be part of a growing understanding that good economic sense equals good environmental sense. Greater Green delivers both of these. By helping sustain Portland's reputation as a green city, as Commissioner Saltzman said this morning, and excuse me if I don't get your quote exactly correct, what is really great is that we're growing green at the base level, our green infrastructure, the trees and our plants and our parks that we have in this city. And that's what's recognized across the country, is we're not just talking about it, we're doing it at that base green level. And I appreciate your comment this morning. And we together can help find winnable, sustainable solutions to our current challenges that we heard about earlier. By supporting this initiative, you're supporting community building, you're supporting community awareness, you're supporting citizen participation, you're supporting sustaining private-public relationships within the city, you're supporting green infrastructure, and most importantly of all, you're supporting smart investment for future generations to enjoy in the city. So I thank you very much for giving me this opportunity tonight. I thank BES for their support of this and all the hard work that they have done, and I thank Commissioner Adams for inviting us for testimony tonight and for your efforts in this matter. Thank you all very much.
We're going to quickly go over the companion resolution as well, council calendar item 512, to create a voluntary funding program that provides an opportunity for Portland sewer ratepayers to invest in making Portland green and improving watershed health. I think this idea of Now, I know this idea first came up from Bob Salinger at Portland Audubon. I think it came up as part of a conversation you had with Commissioner Leonard. We're putting the idea to good use here. And, Dean, if you just quickly walk through some of the details.
Great. I will. Thank you very much. Dean Marriott, Environmental Services. The resolution before you this evening, for which we ask your support, we will be back, if you concur, we would be back next month with the actual ordinance language legally authorizing this program to be established. It would allow Portlanders to volunteer to pay a few pennies a month extra for watershed health. We'd like to get your approval this evening to move forward. As I said, we'll bring back the operating language for you to actually act on next month. How it would work is if you agreed, we would set up the process over the summer, do the education and outreach, and actually begin to have people sign up around Labor Day. What this would do is they would round up, it would allow, would authorize us to round up their sewer and stormwater charges to the next highest dollar figure. And that would, depending on the participation rate, would generate some very meaningful funds to help us achieve our watershed health goals. For instance, if 25% of our customers over time signed up to volunteer to do this, it would add up to $95,000 a year. If 50% over time participated in this program, it would raise $190,000 a year. So just to give you an idea, $190,000 would allow 9 Green Street facilities to be built in our neighborhoods, and it would pay for removing invasive species from 500 acres of Portland land. So it really could make a difference. I just want to indicate that we would utilize our Watershed Science Advisory Group, which is a citizen group to help us set the priorities for how to spend this money, and that we would pledge to report annually to our stakeholders and shareholders, the folks who volunteer to make these donations, so that they know where their donations are going. I think that would be an important part of the communication. So we hope you will be supportive of this effort and look forward to your support. Thank you.
So people will sign up, and there's green power, and now we'll have the option for green sewers.
Five people signed up. First three are Mark Sisma, Lisa DeBrucker, and Jim Winkler. Mark, Lisa, Jim.
Mr. Mayor and members and commissioners, thanks for the opportunity to come and say a few words about the invasive species component of this green initiative. My name is Mark Setzma. I'm the chair of the Environmental Science and Management Department at Portland State and chair of the Oregon Invasive Species Council. Portland, as you know, is known for sustainability, and invasive species are really clearly a sustainability issue in my mind. They're introduced as a result of human trade, travel, commerce, economic activity. That's really the fundamental reason these species are brought to Portland and to Oregon. And so if we want to carry on those activities and have a vibrant economy, we have to address this invasive species that sort of are piggybacking on that vibrant economy that we hope to have. So when these species are introduced, they do impact our lives and the landscape. And many of us live in Portland because we like the landscape. We like the plants and animals that here. It makes Portland different than Des Moines or Kansas City. And lots of the invasive species introductions are really homogenizing our flora and fauna. We're becoming more and more like every place else. So managing invasive species is an important component of sustaining Portland and Oregon in a manner that we appreciate. There are many cost and benefit analysis for invasive species management, and they're almost nearly positive. You almost always get more back for the money you invest in invasive species management. For example, Oregon Department of Agriculture did a study of 6 weed species that were recently introduced. It's important to manage these populations when they're small. And those 6 species, the average payback in terms of money invested in what you actually benefit is $33. So every dollar you invest in management invasive species, you gain $33 in benefits. So that's a pretty good payout, and it's almost seems like to me a no-brainer to take that management approach. Of course, the benefit is best, as I mentioned, when the populations are small. So that really points out the value of early detection and really rapid response. And I was pleased to read that the invasive species component of the Greater Green Initiative has really a pretty major focus on early detection and rapid response. That's really where you get the best benefit, and that's really where we should be investing our money. So I hope you support this effort. I think it'll really solidify Portland as sort of a leader in sustainability and wise environmental management. And it also has a benefit to the rest of the state in that because Portland is the center of economic activity, those species that are brought here can spread out to the rest of the state. So by Portland being involved, it'll actually provide a benefit to the rest of the state. I would also like to thank Commissioner Adams for a summit that he hosted in 2005 on invasive species that really increased the recognition of the problem in Portland and really provided the impetus for, I think, a lot of this invasive species work that's included in this initiative.
And I just want to recognize that in terms of the economic analysis, cost and benefit, you're one of the leading thinkers in that in the nation, and we're lucky to have you here in the Portland area and helping to lead this effort. Thanks.
Mayor Potter, members of the commission, my name is Lisa Debrecker. I'm the Oregon Invasive Species Council coordinator. And on behalf of the council, I want to thank you for your leadership, vision, and guidance in the development of the Greater Green Initiative, particularly as it relates to invasive species. Our council is partnering with numerous federal, state, local, county, and tribal governments, as well as nonprofit organizations, academic institutions, and the media to launch a statewide invasive species campaign on April 22nd with a one-hour documentary from Oregon Public Broadcasting, as Dean mentioned. This campaign is garnering national attention because of its scope, involvement by so many organizations that cross geopolitical lines, and its focus on invasive species. Your own environmental services staff were pivotal in the campaign in many ways, but primarily through the development in concert with the Nature Conservancy and the Oregon Association of Nurseries, among others, to produce a full-color booklet called Garden Smart Oregon. Protecting Oregon from invasive species requires a multi-pronged approach that includes establishing priorities, finding sources of funding, coordinating, outreach and education, and policy and legislation. These are the cornerstones to an effective invasive species strategy. Your Greater Green Project includes each one of these components. You have defined specific goals, benefits, and costs. You have ranked species and prioritized focus areas on best existing parks and park habitat. You're coordinating with other entities and businesses, and you're suggesting policy changes, which is also integral. As Mark mentioned, for every dollar we spend on prevention efforts for invasive species, we save at least $33 in future expenses. So it's a pay now or pay later type concept. We also know that early detection, rapid response is the most effective strategy to keep invasive species at bay. Your Greater Green Project aligns with the efforts that are occurring statewide on early detection rapid response to create a statewide, currently the Nature Conservancy is working on an EDRR program to create a statewide network of public and private partners. This effort involves developing several local programs across the state, then working with groups and organizations such as yours to adopt and adapt the models. In addition, the Nature Conservancy is working with the Oregon Department of Agriculture and our council to implement a state-level EDRR program, which would include some level of coordination and support with organizations such as yours. In summary, our council wants to thank you for your efforts to date in setting the high watermark for what municipalities can do, not only for the city of Portland, but as an example for what other cities and towns in Oregon and throughout the United States can do. Our council looks forward to a continued strong relationship with the city. And if there's anything that we can do to help you, please feel free to call on us.
Thanks. You've been very helpful. And before we hear from Jim, I wanted to introduce, where's Jennifer? This is our invasive species, plant species czar for the city of Portland. She is going to make sure that we're all working together to make sure that the plan to remove invasive plant species works.
Thank you, Sam. Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, I'm delighted to be here to speak in support of this initiative. I think it's crucially important for our community. But as I was sitting in the audience listening, I thought about a few things that I might say. First, I'm here to express and my appreciation for and inspiration by Dean and that entire BES team. I've been inspired by their passion, their commitment, and their financial discipline. And it's had certain tangible manifestations for our community. Some time ago, we developed a project called the Headwaters, in which we daylighted a buried tributary of Tryon Creek, did a number of green streets, a series of stormwater planters, and 8 green roofs. Our efforts were significantly enhanced by the enthusiasm, passion, and commitment of that BES team. And it's so rare that you would find a professional real estate developer coming to City Council to testify in support of a bureau. I think it's significant that they have the capacity to inspire us to do better. And as firms like ours embrace green infrastructure and green development, there's an enormous leverage as our competitors and cohorts decide to do the same thing and look at the way in which it has a certain market panache. As a result of having been involved in the Headwaters, I was asked to be one of the jurors in the Integrating Habitats design competition that Metro did. What I found significant about it is that we had entries from 17 states and several foreign countries interested in green infrastructure development. I believe there's a megatrend here, and that Portland has a national reputation for green development, but that's just the beginning. That after you've done a number of green buildings, you realize that green infrastructure is really the foundation upon which we really do green development, and that the challenge is for us is to find a way to balance the needs of the environment and the built environment. That we can no longer look at development as an activity that degrades the environment. We have to look at it as an activity that restores the environment. And a city that takes a leadership role will inspire its citizens and the business people who are active in that area of endeavor. And so I look at the initiative that you're considering, and I think this is an opportunity to get a fabulous rate of return on a rational economic investment. And I'd like to close by thinking, as I did sitting in the audience, that, perhaps 100 years ago, there was somebody in the equivalent of Executive Director Marriott's position who went to the mayor and city council and said, we can save a lot of money if we put everything in one pipe. Today we're looking at another answer. I think these kinds of initiatives will not only give us a much better city, help us recruit the kinds of people we need for the green-collar jobs of our future, but really have enormous leverage. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. And your development is absolutely inspiring. I encourage you, Council, to go take a tour.
The last two are Kelly Putney and Tom Putman.
Does that mean I get double the time? Well, good evening, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Tom Putman. I live here in Portland. I'm here tonight representing myself. As a civil engineer, urban planner, and LEED accredited professional, I'm a member of Portland's Stormwater Advisory Committee, and I also advise a number of governmental agencies such as the EPA, the U.S. Green Building Council, the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, and the Washington Department of Ecology on green infrastructure and sustainable stormwater policies and practices. Over the last decade, I've witnessed firsthand cities and communities, including Portland, struggling with increasing regulations, decreasing federal, state, and local funding, aging infrastructure, and significant environmental degradation. Gray to green is good for Portland. As presented to you tonight, the benefits of gray to green are numerous. Enhanced watershed health, improved community livability, happy fish and wildlife, greater access to green spaces. These benefits alone are justification enough to support an initiative like gray to green. However, and particularly relevant given our current economic realities, an important question becomes, is gray to green a good investment for Portland? Gray to green represents a paradigm shift in the management of urban infrastructure systems that emphasizes decentralized green infrastructure solutions over traditional gray solutions. The economic benefits accrued by Portlanders to our infrastructure system, our local economy, and our environment based on the shift are significant. These benefits include minimizing the cost of new infrastructure in Portland. Providing new gray infrastructure to properties in Portland costs the city upwards of $100,000 per acre. The adoption of sustainable stormwater solutions on private property could reduce that cost by half. Reducing the cost of infrastructure, operations, and management. For every gallon of stormwater that's kept out of our system, the city saves about a penny. On average, it rains in the city 37 inches per year, creating roughly 20 billion gallons of stormwater annually, much of which enters our sewer system. At a penny per gallon, the adoption of green infrastructure would greatly reduce the O&M savings to the city of Portland. Green infrastructure offers more affordable infrastructure. Over the decades, Portland has invested over $1.5 billion on our Big Pipe project, and the debt burden associated with the bonding of a project of this magnitude will be borne by all Portlanders for decades. Yet the system will be at capacity at 2011. Green infrastructure reduces stormwater fees and enhances property values for all Portland property owners. Green infrastructure also reduces the urban heat island. A recent study by the Portland Office of Sustainable Development found that the use of Icarus within the Central East Side industrial area would not only reduce stormwater runoff by 20 million gallons a year, but could reduce peak energy demand by 6.5%, an annual energy savings to local businesses of $600,000, and also reducing carbon emissions by 6,000 tons per year. Localized green infrastructure expertise created by green localized green infrastructure expertise. The list of economic benefits truly goes on, and the accrual of benefits to watershed, infrastructure systems, and local economy adds up to millions of dollars each year. The price tag of gray to green is not insignificant and should be scrutinized through the lens of fiscal responsibility. But based on the information that I and others have highlighted tonight, whether a watershed manager, a local business, a homeowner, a great blue heron, a city commissioner, a mayor, gray to green is good for you. And Greater Green is a wise investment for Portland. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all who signed up.
Okay. There's no action taken on item 509. The second, 510 is a resolution. Please call the vote.
Adams.
Thank you to all of you that testified, there are many people in the audience who have had input on this, and I want to thank you as well over the weeks, months, and years. In the packet that is available online is when Bob talked about the science and the accountability for results. It's summarized in this 11 by 17 piece of paper, and we break it down in terms of hydrology improvements, habitat, water quality, and other benefits and factors for the very specific actions that we seek to take as part of this. Why are we doing this? It is about the environment. Ultimately, all of our watersheds flow to the Willamette River. And the more the 37 inches of rain that we get a year can go on the ground, the more it recharges the groundwater. The more groundwater Randy is Water Bureau Commissioner has to pump out of the ground on an emergency basis with the wells, but equally important is the more we recharge the Willamette River, which up to 30% of a healthy Willamette River needs to be coming up from the groundwater below, and especially important in the summer months. So thanks to everyone. Aye.
Leonard.
It's just so interesting to me that another generation of city council people and Portlanders thought that the way we improve our city is to cut trees, lay asphalt, create sewer pipes, drain everything into a sewer pipe, problem solved. And that this generation has discovered that really the better and smarter thing is to not drain everything into pipes and to not have everything hidden underground, problem solved, as opposed to that, to allow things to allow runoff to actually run off into these wonderful bioswales. The council is probably tired of hearing this, but there is no more dramatic improvement I've seen in any neighborhood in this city, and I urge any of you who haven't been out to go view it, than between Holgate and Powell on Southeast 92nd, when BES, in cooperation with the Portland Development Commission, took a street that had no sidewalks, that had really a very Appalachian feel about it, installed sidewalks and bioswales, and it magically transformed the street to not just be a more eco-friendly street, it is one of the most beautiful streets in the city because of the bioswales. And by adopting these technologies, we're not only doing things good for the environment, we're making the city a much nicer place for people to live and to enjoy. And I just really appreciate Sam's focus on this. I knew when I sent Bob over to Sam's office to pursue this idea further of having a checkoff or some kind of ability for Portlanders to voluntarily support green infrastructure in the city that something would get done. I'm surprised it happened this quick, and I'm pleased that to be able to sit here in such a quick turn with such a quick turnaround and vote for something that I think is good for the environment, good for the aesthetics of our city, and I think certainly allows us to pass on to another generation of Portlanders a better Portland than what we inherited. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, on the Greater Green Initiative, which we're not actually voting on right now, I just want to say that I think it's really something that's long overdue, and I think the opportunity to refinance our bonds and invest at least half of that amount in green infrastructure is really the type of thing that we should be proud of here in Portland. I want to commend the Bureau of Environmental Services and Commissioner Adams for making this happen and giving us tangible benchmarks and projects that we can measure our progress for this investment. On the roundup of bills, I think this will be an interesting experiment. I'm curious to know how many people will choose to take advantage of that roundup, but I think it's a great goal. And I guess above all this is the primacy of, once again, of recognizing the natural hydrologic cycle and how it worked for this planet for millions of years, thousands of years, and how we've gone astray in the last 100 years or so. And while we look for ways to restore and mimic natural systems and better connect our built environment to our natural environment, and that's what these initiatives are doing, and I applaud them. Aye.
Potter.
I want to thank Commissioner Adams, Dean, folks at BES, and all the good citizens who worked on this project. For myself, I will be one of those folks rounding up my BES bill. I think it's a great project, and I'm going to put my money where my vote is, and my vote is aye. We're recessed until 2 p.m. tomorrow.
Thank you all.
Good job.